arrival is somewhat delayed. His meeting in the cabinet committee this morning will only conclude at before 10:30, which is when we can expect him. Just a few things whilst we're waiting for him. I have received a letter from SAPS in response to my letter on your behalf asking for a progress report on the fraud charges against Mr. Mteto. I'll have these emailed to you. No, the other one just simply said they acknowledge receipt. Yes, this is a follow-up, all right. I've also been sent a copy of a letter from the Office of the South African Human Rights Commission, which they've written to the Speaker, expressing their disappointment with lack of progress on their request for an additional 37.35 million, which we recommended as part of our BRRR. It would appear that Treasury have only granted them 6 million rand. We'll have to see how this year's budget accommodates that request, but the tone of this letter is, well, understandably quite irate, and they have threatened to turn down requests from portfolio committees to attend meetings and present reports. I guess we all have a right to protest in one way or the other. At some point, we're going to have to think about Sentencing Guidelines for the Sexual Offences Act. Next Parliament? You think we should leave it for them? You should wait for that. Okay. Mr. Jeffrey? Well, at the moment, all we've said is they can refer to the CPA fraud procedure. Yes, sentencing guidelines, okay? And we had flagged that as something that we would deal with at some later stage. We didn't raise it during our workshop on the year's program. So, Smuts is whispering that perhaps we should leave it for the next parliament. Well, I thought the ministry would do that and present it to us for us to take further. Yeah.
We should do with the Sexual Offences Act is look at the implementation. You know, follow up from the hearing effectively that we had a year before last. I think that needs to happen. And that needs to be properly planned. I mean, we've agreed on that anyway, where we invite civil society organizations to make their input.
Once we've received the ministry's...
No. Unlinked to the sentence.
Ahead of that?
Yes, it's a separate issue, basically.
Okay.
So, there are a number of sort of smaller legal points on the Act. The age of consent and what do we call statutory rape now? But there's that issue. There's the issue of the sentencing guidelines. So those we can leave. They're bigger issues, but the actual implementation of the Act from the police, from the Department of Justice, from the Department of Social Development, that one we had agreed, that and the Child Justice Act, we wanted to get reports on the progress, and as we did last time, I think it would be useful to get civil society's input as well, or in request some of these civil society groups.
So we link sexual offences with the child justice.
Well, I'm saying two separate, as we did last time, year before last, we have two separate hearings on the implementation of the legislation. But I think with the sentencing, it should come from the department. And if it's not ready this year, I mean, there's no lacuna currently. We could the next parliament can deal with it.
Okay, so that's child justice and sexual offences. Good. You don't have a problem with that proposal? Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I mean, Steve is well, don't want to speak for him, but he's raising the constitutional, that's on the age of consent.
Yes.
Those ones also, that's just one particular issue.
Sure.
We await the outcome of the court, or we can look at deciding whether we want to try and amend the section, because I do think it is a little bit too wide, and this issue, this duty on people to report is problematic. But the main issue, though, is there's a lot more to that act, and given all the sexual crimes, it's something we should look at. And then I think also, you know, from a public point of view, I saw a piece on Annie Lennox is now campaigning on gender violence, which is a good thing. But one of the things that she raised concern about, or what she wants to campaign for, is more serious crime and more serious sentences for rape. Now, rape is life unless there's extenuating circumstances, minimum sentence. So we can't do anything more than that. But I mean, just I think to popularize to the public, there is talk of the issue of chemical castration, which is maybe something that could come up in the hearings, and we look at how we respond to it. It obviously would be a decision that you can't take overnight. You need to carefully weigh up the issues.
So please bear in mind also, Mr. Jeffrey, on the same issue, Women's Legal Center, in their letter to me, raised the case of one Edson Doe, who raped a 15-year-old girl. The court sentenced him to life imprisonment. Subsequently, on appeal, it was reduced to 15 years imprisonment. He now qualifies for parole because he was sentenced 8 years ago. Substantial and compelling reasons for the reduction include the fact that he gave the victim presents, she did not cry or fight him, and she did not bear any noticeable physical injuries. So, I don't know. You know, I know that it's anecdotal, but I don't know. You what do you say? Mr. Swat, and then you, JJ.
Now, Chair, I agree that with JJ, this is an issue we need to really look at. I think the widespread outrage about rape in general in society requires us to look very carefully, and it's been a great concern of mine that whole act has been written off as the kissing bill almost.
Yeah.
And yes, there are some issues that do need tidying up, and we need to await the outcome of the Constitutional Court ruling. At this stage, the bill is fully constitutional until it is declared so by the Constitutional Court. But it is a pity that it's so much focus has been just put on the one aspect and called a kissing bill, whilst so much good is contained in that bill, comprehensive legislation. So I would like to look at, as you suggested, the implementation of that, sexual offences, as we've done in the past, together with the Child Justice Act, particularly in view of the widespread outrage. And maybe then one would have a better understanding, the public would have a better understanding of what we sought to achieve with that legislation, together with the sentencing. But that which you've just mentioned now, anecdotally, is a matter of concern. Where we have laid down minimum sentences, we know the judiciary is not very fond of that, but it has been found constitutional, minimum sentences, and therefore it would be interesting to find out, have a look at that judgment in particular. And so I welcome the input from the Women's Legal Center for us to start looking at that as well.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Good.
What I was going to say is that that would be one of the aspects on the implementation of the Act that you know, people can raise. I'm not sure how much one does about it, because the minimum sentence is life, unless there are, what is the wording, I think, substantial and compelling circumstances. And that's up to the courts to determine whether that exists, which they did in this particular case. And we can't make it any tighter than allowing the courts that discretion, because I think then there would be concerns around the constitutionality of the minimum sentences. I'm not sure which court found that there were substantial and compelling circumstances, whether it was the SCA or which court it was, but if that decision was wrong, then everybody's entitled to complain about it.
Yeah.
And because I mean, the reasons given seem to be a bit strange. But I think that would be part of the hearings.
Sure.
I think the other aspect, though, and I don't know if this is what they're raising, is the parole regime, and whether sexual offenders should qualify for parole.
Hmm.
I think that's probably the bigger question, and that we'd have more leeway. Usually when there's remission of sentences, quite often they don't apply to perpetrators of violent crimes or sexual offences. I can't remember whether these remissions did. But I think the issue of what happens post-sentencing is something we should also be looking at. And maybe we'd need to hear from correctional services, what are the attitudes of parole boards, are the parole boards given any guidelines as far as sexual offenders? What is the extent of recidivism of sexual offenders?
Mm.
So those that do come out, what percentage recommit sexual offences rather than other crimes? But I think those are all things for the hearings. But definitely, I think we'd need to. It would be useful, I think, if Christine, who doesn't seem to be listening, as content advisor, would maybe do us a proposal for how we structure the hearings on these two acts. And then we make comment on that and then can go ahead.
Before I recognize you, Ms. Smuts. Well, I think there's a question arising from what you've just said, and Mr. Swart as well. When is rape not a violent crime? Well, you know, I remember when we did this act here. We debated that point extensively, you know, and we came to the agreement that it's always a violent crime. But it's the courts who decide, so, you know, notwithstanding our views on the matter. Ms. Smuts.
Chair, whilst I'm entirely sympathetic to the motivation of members in wishing to deal with this now, at what is yet another crisis point, I do think we should bear in mind that this, as I understand it, is going to be a short parliamentary year. We have started on the legal practice law. That is going to be one of the really big laws that we do during this term. And I just wonder if we're not over-ambitious in wanting to tackle both sexual offences and the legal practice law. How short is the year going to be?
I'm not in a position to tell you. I've just made up my mind that we are going to fulfill our mandate and complete whatever is placed before us before the elections next year. That's all I've said to myself, and I trust that you are going to adopt the same approach. We've heard the briefing on the proposed legislation that will come before us. Yes. So all that has to be taken into consideration. The problem with the Child Justice Act is that the first public hearings we had with all the role players was a disaster. And we all agree that we should do it again, only this time much, much better. So we owe it to the people of South Africa Mrs. Schaefer.
I do share my colleague's concerns about time, but I do think, given the current crisis that we're facing, and it seems to be getting more and more violent, that we should make an attempt to do it this year.
Mr. Sibanyani.
Yeah, Chairperson, I should think they are both equally of importance. And when you talk about the legal practice bill, insofar as the number of times discussions have been taking place by the interested stakeholders and the like, I should think it's time that we should try our utmost to see how far we can push it forward. And if during this term of the parliament, I think be it so, and then also the sexual offences issues, it's topical. Nobody can undermine or belittle that. It's an outrage. In fact, it's strange why people all of a sudden have decided to become to behave in the way that is happening.
Mm.
It calls upon all of us. It's a societal issue. Mm. It has been escalating, Honorable Mark. It's not all of a sudden, but it's a cause for concern. Yes.
All right. Okay. Any other views on this particular matter? Mr. Romano and I will sit down and look at when we can schedule public hearings. But before we formally agree, we'll bring it to you as a committee. All right. You all aware of the situation with regards the magistrate's remuneration? Just to bring Mr. Fanamerva up to date, if I may, Mr. Fanamerva, assuming that you're not up to date. All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. As you know,
good morning. Deputy Minister, it's a long list. You're all very, very welcome. Whilst we were waiting for you to arrive, we were covering some outstanding issues. And with your permission, I'd like to just complete those. It won't take a few minutes. Mr. Fanamerva, as you know, like you and me and judges and traditional leaders, the remuneration of magistrates is now dealt with by the Independent Commission. That process was finalized, and the Commission sent their recommendations to the President, who in turn made a recommendation of an across-the-board increase of 5.5%, which everyone accepted barring the magistrates. There were a number of objections they raised, and to cut a long story short, they've taken the Commission's decision and the President's decision on review to the Constitutional Court.
committee members feel that we should engage further with them, because all we've had is a briefing from one senior magistrate. And I'm informed by Mr. Romano that both Juwasa and Aramsa will appear before us next week. So members, please make a note of that, and please come prepared for that occasion, because all of you, I know, are really geared up. We also have the issue of additional human rights commissioners that must be appointed. Can we agree this morning, before we hear the minister and deputy minister, that we should proceed with the process of advertising for nominations?
Yes, I mean, the Human Rights Commission have been complaining for, I don't know if this is, Minister, you can't see what's happening on the screen behind you, but the computer's crashed. I don't know if this is going to be a part of a request for more funding for the... you know, the Human Rights Commissioners have been complaining about the vacancy. What I just wasn't clear about, and I'm not sure if it's possible to... but the request from the Minister was for the filling of the vacancy caused by the death of Commissioner Bai. But then the second part I wasn't too clear on, it was a second commissioner pending the passing of the legislation, which I think we're still waiting to, I think it's about to be tabled. And I think we don't need that legislation to appoint an additional commissioner. So it was a question, it would make more sense if we advertised for two, came up with two names than doing it in parts. But we may need to get clarity. We need to get clarity. I'm not sure if the minister can give it now or after he's finished his address or whatever. But we may just need to clarify that aspect.
Okay.
And then, Chair, you welcomed the minister, and I think you formally still got to do it. But you were informally welcoming the minister and the deputy minister to their first appearance this year.
Okay.
You failed to do so for Honourable Van der Merwe.
Okay.
I think the minister was with us last year as well. I don't recall Honourable Van der Merwe being with us.
Yes,
I don't recall Honourable Van der Merwe being with us last year.
Right.
But,
of course, welcome. It's such a rare pleasure to have you. All right. Honourable members. Oh, yes. Sorry, Mr.
One remark on the Human Rights Commission Act, and this is now relevant to the discussions we've just had about attacking sexual offences. I don't have to remind you that the Human Rights Commission still functions under the first act ever done in this democratic parliament in 1994, that it is written under the interim constitution. It requires 11 commissioners. We really cannot continue with the situation, and if anything is urgent, it's that new bill. And we can do it quite quickly. I'm sure it'll be unproblematic. And it is more desirable to appoint people under a proper statute that is 1996 constitution confident than appointing in something of a vacuum. It's been such a history of disaster, the appointment of the Human Rights Commissioners, including the occasion when President Mbeki unilaterally decided he wouldn't appoint 5 of the 11 names we think. Let's clear this up once and for all. Let's do that act quite quickly and appoint the two under the new statute. How are we going to fund them when the SAHRC has now run out of money? A different question.
Don't worry about that. There's a way around that. Yes, there's a way around that. All right. Honourable members, this is a final point before I hand over to the minister. I did communicate with you about the fact that you had given me a directive to write to the Auditor General asking for an investigation into allegations about maladministration in the Public Protector's Office, which I did. I copied the letter to the Speaker. The Speaker asked to speak to me, which I did, and asked us to retract that letter and to follow a different approach, which is to adopt a report of the committee, table it in the House and let the House approve it. I hope I have your approval for that. I've agreed to it, and I've asked both Christine and Gillian, content advisor and research unit of the committee, to quickly draft a report for us. And can we proceed along those lines? Okay. All right. Minister, formally welcome.
Thank you.
It's always good to have you. Deputy Minister, welcome. It's really good to see you guys here with your team, and we're looking forward to listening to your briefing. And let me hand over to you straight away. Your button is there. There you go. All right.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the Justice Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister, and the senior officials of the department. I just need to apologize for the Director General. She is unable to be with us this morning because she's chairing the JCPS cluster of DGs this morning. That's why she's not here. We have been requested to give a preview of our budget policy statement, which will be delivered in the course of this year. So the outline of my presentation will be introduction and indicating the environmental context of the 2013-14 budget policy statement and some of the key justice-related outputs that are contained in the National Development Plan. We'll also be highlighting issues around building safer communities, intensifying the fight against crime and corruption, combating of sexual offenses against women and children, reaffirming the authority of the state, and highlighting some of the transformation within the judiciary program, and also indicating some key legislation and high-level programs that are planned for 2013-2014, and also indicating the impact of the budget cuts for the administration of justice. I take this opportunity to welcome the opportunity to share with the Portfolio Committee some perspective concerning our work and to seek its leadership and guidance as we plan the 2013-14 financial year. I wish to highlight the following two aspects that were canvassed extensively during 2012-13 financial year. Firstly, the turnaround strategy to reverse the negative audit reports. We have been interacting with the Auditor General for their assistance and through the assistance of your committee. I'm pleased to indicate that progress is being made towards our ultimate goal of a clean audit. We have made significant strides in this regard, and I wish to highlight the following. We managed to clear all qualifications on irregular expenditure. We have concluded in the past 12 months outstanding financial statements for third-party funds for three financial years. During our budget vote, we'll be highlighting more information regarding this significant aspect. During the course of this week, I'll also be meeting with the Auditor General to further have a dialogue with them on the progress that is being made and some of the outstanding matters that still need our attention. On the witness protection program, as the committee is aware, we do not have the resources at this moment in time because of the bleak economic outlook. As we have noticed from the budget vote, from the budget statement by the Minister of Finance, to accept the additional responsibility of the witness protection program. When the fortunes of the department's finances improve, then we'll be able to come back to this particular issue. But I am satisfied that the National Prosecuting Authority is doing everything it can to ensure that this function happens without any glitches. On the filling of critical posts in the department, the process of filling senior management posts is underway. All the vacant positions at the level of DDG have been advertised. Interviews have been held in respect of a DDG Corporate Services and Constitutional Development, and recommendations have been put forward to the cabinet, and I do hope in the next meeting of the cabinet those appointments will be made. We have shortlisted for the Chief Financial Officer, and the DDG legislation and interviews are going to be held very soon. In the recruitment process, we are very mindful of the need to meet our constitutional imperative to establish a representative management core, especially women. I can indicate that those posts that I've indicated we are recommending to cabinet, we had very good women candidates. Members will also be aware of the appointment of the Secretary General in the office of the Chief Justice, namely Ms. Meme Sejusengwe, also a woman. This appointment comes at the right time as we prepare for the enactment and implementation of the Superior Court's bill. The 2013-14 budget policy statement, which we'll present later on, must be viewed within this context. Firstly, this being the last year of the fourth administration and with elections scheduled to take place in 2014 next year, emphasis that we put is on consolidation and implementing of existing policy and not necessarily formulating any new policies. Two, the review of the work of the JCPS cluster to assess its successes and challenges during the past 5 years. The outcome of this review will contribute to the broader review of the government program of action, which was sanctioned by Cabinet in 2011. Similarly, the appointment of research institution to conduct assessment of the impact of our jurisprudence in the Constitutional Court and Supreme Court of Appeal is being finalized, and work will start in the next financial year, April 2013. Of the five priorities that underpin our government's program of action, safety and crime prevention as an output of the National Development Plan is directly attributed to the justice sector, in particular the justice, crime prevention and security cluster. Furthermore, the justice sector contributes indirectly to other priorities of our government, namely education, health, unemployment, rural development and land reform. Illiteracy, poverty, underdevelopment and deprivation are linked to criminality. Access to justice or lack thereof needs all the above five priorities of government. Crime and corruption pose the greatest threat against the realization of all the five priorities of our government. It is for this reason that the JCPS cluster will continue putting measures in place to guarantee the safety of our citizens for the full realization of the rights enshrined in our democratic constitution. Within the justice sector, the National Development Plan spearheads the joint, integrated, and mutually reinforcing programs of the JCPS cluster departments, law enforcement agencies, and the judiciary, which are geared towards the achievement of the five goals that are elucidated in the National Development Plan, namely strengthening the criminal justice system, the ultimate goal being the achievement of a single, integrated, seamless, and modern criminal justice system with a single set of objectives, priorities, and performance measurement targets. Strengthening the judicial governance and the rule of law, the finalization of the legislative framework affirming the Chief Justice as the head of the judiciary, and the concomitant establishment of the Office of the Chief Justice to provide the Chief Justice with the requisite capacity to perform the function as a cutting edge of our judicial transformation discourse. Access to justice, inaccessible courts, caused by, amongst others, the legacy of the past demarcation and skewed distribution of courts, exorbitant cost for obtaining legal service, overstretched court roles which cause inordinate delays in the finalization of cases, are some of the myriad factors that present major barriers to access to justice, resulting in the weakening of the rule of law. The role of the judiciary in a developing South African state, the National Development Plan recognizes a need for an ideal South African judge to encompass a range of qualities and attributes, including a progressive judicial philosophy and an outstanding understanding of the socio-economic context in which the law is being interpreted and enforced. Investment in our economy, which has remained resilient amid global turmoil, as the Minister of Finance indicated in his budget vote last week, can only thrive in an environment characterized by the rule of law. Our budget policy statement as a department will give a detailed account of how the above outputs will be reflected in the department's programs. The 34 proclamations that were issued by the President since 2009 to investigate allegations of corruption, fraud, and maladministration in various state institutions during the current term of this administration is unprecedented. This shows that our government is pulling out all stops to eradicate corruption. The JCPS cluster in particular will leave no stone unturned in this crusade to rid our government and our economy of corruption and underhand dealings. In the budget policy statement, we will indicate measures that the cluster is undertaking to enhance the capacity of law enforcement agencies in intensifying this fight against this scourge. An announcement regarding the naming and shaming of perpetrators convicted of corruption will be made as from April 2013. We have recently seen an upsurge of reported incidents of rape, sexual offences, and violence against women and children. It is important to establish whether this upsurge reflects an increase in these heinous crimes or reporting thereof. Our government and the committed lunch are outraged at these barbaric acts. The underreporting of these horrendous crimes, which the National Development Plan acknowledges in so many words, is attributed to, amongst others, that these crimes are mostly happening among the cycle of people who are known to each other or have family ties. And there is an imbalance of power relations between the perpetrators and the victims, who are often underage. We need to encourage victims and affected people to come forward to report these incidents for the law to take its course. Progress has been made regarding the re-establishment of the Sexual Offences Court. The details of these courts will be announced soon, in the beginning of this financial year in April this year. The JCPS cluster of DGs, as I've indicated, the meeting as we speak, is developing an integrated program to take forward the work done by the task teams that were established to look into the establishment of the sexual offences courts and the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, and intersex LGBTI communities. This will ensure effective interface between the sexual offences courts and the family violence, child protection, and sexual offences units in the police, and any other intervention initiated by the cluster department and the judiciary. Similarly, there are ongoing discussions with the Office of the Chief Justice, the South African Judicial Education Institute, the regional court presidents, which are aimed at strengthening the social context training for judicial officers to deal effectively with all these matters. We are indebted to the Justice Portfolio Committee for pioneering some of the key legislation that are aimed at transformation of the judiciary and enhancing the administration of justice more broadly. This includes the enactment of the Constitution 17th Amendment Act, the approval by the National Assembly of the Superior Court's Bill, and the adoption of the Judicial Code of Conduct. I'm also advised that work on the regulations on judges' registrable interest is also being prioritized. These regulatory frameworks are the bulwark of an independent judiciary. My gratitude also goes to the Portfolio Committee for the amendments effected on the Criminal Law Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Bill at very short notice and under extreme pressure, thereby avoiding what could have been catastrophic in relation to the sentences for sexual offences. The approval by this committee of other bills, namely the Prevention and Combating of Trafficking in Persons Bill, the Prevention and Combating of Torture in Persons Bill, the Criminal Procedure Amendment Bill dealing with criminal appeals, Sheriff's Amendment Bill, Judicial Matters Amendment Bill, and the Protection of Personal Information Bill have had all positive impact on access to justice and the administration of justice generally. Now that the Superior Court Bill is almost behind us, we will be approaching this committee to draft legislation which is aimed at transforming the magistracy. I'm mindful that the legislative program may be shorter to allow preparation for the elections. We also aim to introduce other bills, amongst them the amendment of the State Attorneys Act to provide for the appointment of a Solicitor General, which is crucial for the state. We'll also consider the increase of the monetary jurisdictions of the Magistrates Court, which has been 100,000 rand for over a long period of time. Similarly, consideration will be given to the increase of the jurisdiction of the Civil Regional Courts, which was fixed at 300,000 rand over 3 years ago. We will be making announcement once we have sought the view of critical stakeholders in this regard. Finally, the budget of the department poses serious challenges that affect the performance of the department and that of the courts, in particular with regard to the following. One, security. Security management contract. Security management contracts are in excess of 1.3 billion rand over 3 years. Infrastructure, the damage that the committee is aware that was caused by fire in the courts in Pretoria, Inkanyezi and Polokwane Masters Courts have exacerbated our challenges. So that's where I end, Chair and members of the committee. So we'll be able to engage. As I've said, we have the Deputy Minister here and the officials led by the Chief Operating Officer. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Deputy Minister, you don't wish to add? Good. All right. All right. Honourable members, let me take your hands. Mr. Jeffrey, Ms. Smuts, Mr. Swart, Mrs. Schaefer, for now, in that order, please.
Okay, thanks, and thanks to the Minister. Minister, there was an item on the second slide, the outline of the presentation, right at the end, called Challenges Relating to the TRC. It wasn't then in your input. Now, the problem mainly is the regulations, which are a problem because they are multi-ministerial, I suppose you could put it. So it's not solely the responsibility of the Minister of Justice, and it really relates to other areas, housing, education, But I think to stress that it's we get given, the department gave us quite a comprehensive report last year, and those deadlines just are not met. And I think it's something more for Cabinet as a whole, but, you know, we're going for coming up for 20 years since the cut-off date in the TRC. We're heading towards victims of human rights violations, grandchildren now being, you know, the people who are needing education and things, and really to urge that those really must be finalized. I think the other point I wanted to raise is yes, we appreciate, you know, that there have been significant budget cuts, but last year in the budget, and I know I've seen a letter, I think, that you sent us wanting us to hear from the NPA around what they were doing. The percentage, I think the 1, 2, 3 percentage cuts for the NPA are extremely worrying, because if you don't have the judicial system working, then it really brings into question or causes problems for the whole fabric of society. One of the points we raised last year was that maybe the capital expenditure program should be reviewed. Obviously, we're in the process the Polokwane High Court is almost complete, and there needs to be a Mpumalanga High Court. But that, you know, the difficulty seems to be that new courts are being built, which obviously improve access to justice. But at the back, if courts are not renovated or kept functional, then the people in using those courts get deprived of access. So it was a question of I'm not sure whether you'd looked at that proposal of limiting the any new capital expenditure in favour of using the money elsewhere, particularly for the maintenance of courts. That's just it for now.
Thank you, sir. Just to deal first with the Office for Witness Protection, the Minister last year conceded the case is unarguable since the law says so, that it has to be with justice. It nevertheless, since Gulalani and Kukas Day, has been with NPA. Now, sir, I heard you. You said that there isn't simply not the money to move it. But some money is going to it, presumably under the NPA budget. And my correspondents there say it is a fact that every year, without consultation, the NPA just takes the OWP funds to lessen their own burdens on overspending. Now, of course, we will quiz the NPA on that when they appear before us, but if you have any comment. I would like your insight, if possible, on the financial problems at the NPA and perhaps more broadly. We were made aware last year that there's a problem with the OSD, the occupational, yes, and also that there's a further problem with performance assessments of senior management in the department, which were never finalized by Mr. Menzies Simulani when he was DG there, and that is creating a potential financial crisis. One or both of these issues, as it was described to us, had lit a fire in the public service. Now, already we're in a situation where, as the economist Davy Root said yesterday in Business Day, the money is finished, geld is op. What are we going to do? Do we have a real financial crisis looming for either the NPA or the NPA and the DOJ both in respect of monies owed to public servants? If so, what on earth are we going to do? I have one small question. You've quoted to us the National Development Plan on the ideal judge who is described as having a progressive judicial philosophy and an understanding of the socioeconomic context. May I say that I did raise with Minister Trevor Manuel the fact that this description makes the ideal judges sound like a bunch of lefties. I think it's the most unfortunate description, most unfortunate to describe what kind of a an orientation you want from your judges, and I sincerely hope the JSC, including yourself, will ignore the NDP in this respect. But I want to ask you, apropos of that, on your page 6, slide 11, you refer to the social context training for judges, which has arisen from the NDP requirement. I have seen, because somebody sent it to me, a training program for judges in the North, and almost every item on the program was described as social context training. And I would just like to ask, and perhaps your staff will answer, who the people are who are being appointed or invited to address the judges on social context training? Are they academics? The name I have seen was not somebody of any particular note, and the same person was going to present almost all of the sessions during this particular seminar for judges. So now I would think that the Office of the Chief Justice runs this stuff, but in the event that the excellent Mr. J.B. Skosana or someone else knows, and perhaps you should be aware of it. I mean, we can't run around having social context training run by people who do not inspire any particular confidence. Sir, I would like to ask you something else lastly. We know now that we've been waiting an awfully long time for the appointments of both the NDPP and the SIU. I'd like to ask you your personal view on something on which I've never heard your view, and that is the appointment mechanism for the NDPP in this country. Section 179 of the Constitution places that appointment power in the hands of the President, pretty much unencumbered by requirements of consultation. But in 2008, the then President Mutlante expressed the view that we should find a different appointment mechanism. Your predecessor, Mr. Enver Soetie, expressed the view that Parliament should look at its own role in the appointment of an NDPP. All of the Justice MPs, all parties who sat on the Vusi Pikoli ad hoc expressed the same view, namely that since Parliament ultimately decides whether an NDPP loses his or her job, Parliament should also play a role in the appointment. It is my view and the DA's view that Parliament should appoint the NDPP by using the same mechanism we use for the Chapter 9s, namely a multi-party a committee of parliament proportionally composed, invites nominations, interviews, shortlists, and chooses. And it is for the president at the time simply to perform the executive function of signing the document. Now, I've heard the views of the former President Mutlante, of Mr. Enver Soetie, of previous MPs. We discussed the issue amongst ourselves. I would like to see us produce a committee bill to this effect. I had thought that the President by now long ago would have appointed the replacement. Therefore, the timing was not such that we could have any immediate effect by bringing a proposed amendment to Section 179 of the Constitution. But I invite you to, and you may wish to, you may not wish to give us your views on whether constitutional amendments to the appointment mechanism would be desirable. You are the one single person who is consulted on these appointments. Perhaps you wish to add in your remarks whether we are to look forward to a proposed appointment very shortly or not. Time seems to be passing.
Mr. Swartz.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Minister, for the input. Minister, we are aware of the severe budget constraints that the Department and the NPA suffers under. There's an interesting sentence in the budget document that we received last week, page 555. It says, Cabinet-approved reductions of 610 million have been effected over the medium term in relation to spending on goods and services and payments for capital assets as there were delays in the implementation of capital works projects. Now, it seems that to us there's far deeper problems financially than merely delays in implementation of capital works projects, and it seems a lot is also taken from goods and services. Would you like to comment on that? And then secondly, the Minister of Finances took great pains last week to explain the fight against fraud and corruption and how he is struggling in that regard. Progress has been made, but clearly in response to our questions here previously to the SIU, an estimate of 30 billion rand per year was given as to the extent of procurement fraud in the public sector. And it seems quite obvious that if one gives more resources to those agencies fighting fraud and corruption, one will be able to recover more money. And in particular, the SIU, which, as we know, has civil litigation and works closely with the asset forfeiture unit. Of concern to me in the broader context, and we will be engaging with the department, the NPA, about the budget haircut and the concerns in that regard. But the SIU in particular, if one looks at the medium-term budget for them, the Public Protector, the Human Rights Commission, all have increasing budgets over the medium term. But the Special Investigating Unit has a decreasing budget for the present year up to March. It's 340 million, then it goes down to 305 million, then down to 296. And it is a bit of a concern that they seem to have been given even a more severe haircut than others. Would you like to comment on that? Is there any particular reason for that? And would you not agree with me that it is imperative that that agency, together with other agencies, are given the necessary resources to fight fraud and corruption, and in so doing, that would help us with the budget deficit that the country is facing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Minister, for your input. Just like to ask you, first of all, on your slide on page, your second slide, your point 3.4, you refer to reaffirming the authority of the state. What exactly do you mean by that? As far as the third-party funds are concerned, the DG has given us quite a detailed progress report on the matter, but it would appear from reading it that there still is an issue regarding Treasury, and Treasury not coming to the party with the issue of whether you should have an entity or not. Can you give us any idea as to that? Because they're, at the same time, they're proposing a new act, a new bill, but they still seem to be referring to the fact that Treasury needs to decide whether there should be this separate trading entity, I think they called it. Is there any news on that? And if not, have you engaged Treasury on that? You're well aware of my concerns regarding the SIU, and I would be very, very grateful if you could explain to us here today why it's taken 14 months to find a new permanent head. What are the delays? You did announce last year in August in reply to my parliamentary question that it would be imminent. You then said that at the SONA address it would be by the 28th of February. We still have had no announcement. Why, and can you tell us what the delays are and what is progress that's being made? I also would like to know, many of the sexual offences cases that we hear about appear to relate to problems regarding the SAPs and their collection of evidence at the crime scene. Have you had any discussions with SAPs regarding improving that? Because it appears to me from anecdotal evidence that often relates to our failure to secure convictions in these matters. And then, could you please just elaborate a bit more on what your idea of the Solicitor General is? What do you envisage that person doing, and why is it necessary? And then lastly, on the issue of the fire at Polokwane, have there been any outcomes of the police investigation? Was it arson, and if so, are there any suspects that have been identified and or arrested? Thank you.
Not full.
Yes,
Minister. On the first question on TRC, the delay has been occasioned, as Jeffries has highlighted, because we have to interface and consult with other government departments, health, education, housing, and so on. So that process has taken an inordinate lot of time. But I think we're at the end of it, because I recall we received about comments from health who are in agreement with that, and I think education. I think there are just a few outstanding now. But that process is almost done as far as I can understand. The percentage cut in NPA, these are not our cuts. we take the view that we accept Cabinet's collective decision-making and the role of the Minister's Committee on the Budget. So it's not as if we said cut there. So that's how they did it. Review of capital expenditure program is also related to the question asked by Mr. Swart as well. Also, we're not in control of this because the responsibility of actually implementing our capital project is by the Department of Public Works. So I'm sure the committee is aware of the challenges that the department faces. That is why I suspect it was easy for the Minister's Committee on the Budget to have this cut first, 600 million rand, because in some instances no work had been done by the Department of Public Works. So I can leave it at that. On the issue of the NPA and the Witness Protection Service, I think maybe the officials will respond to that. On the Occupational Special Dispensation, my understanding is that the NPA has been paid. This. Yeah, they have been. What is an ideal judge? I think we have, as a government and people of South Africa, we have accepted the National Development Plan, but it doesn't mean that each and every sentence that is contained there. So that's why we put this deliberately, so that the committee must have its views as to what has happened. But my colleague in the JSC, Van der Merwe, he knows how we interview candidates. It's not an ideological perspective. We want judges who are going to interpret our constitution in a manner that advances our democracy. Social context, I think the deputy minister, who is a member of this education institute, will answer those questions. On the appointment of SIU and NDPP, I can only say it is imminent. It is imminent. That I know for sure. My view about what the former president said on it, I have to reflect on it, but at the moment, I think the Constitution is very clear that the power lies with the head of state to appoint the National Director of Public. I've already answered that question by Mrs. Swart on the capital projects. The one on the decrease in SIU, my understanding on the reasoning of the Minister's Committee on the Budget, that over and above the direct allocations to the SIU, in some instances, the requesting departments for investigation, they sometimes contribute towards the funding of the SIU operations. So I think they were making a balancing act. But that's my reading of how they took those decisions. But I do concede that overall it does appear like a decrease, but I can only explain my own deduction from the reasoning of the Minister's Committee on the Budget. On the issue of reaffirming the authority of the state, this is in relation to issues of public violence within the context of public demonstrations. That what we are saying as the executive is that our constitution allows all South African citizens to demonstrate unarmed in order to express a view. That is guaranteed. But in doing so, we should not violate the rights of other citizens, including the destruction of property, either private or public, and in some instances, loss of lives. So the point that is that we need to reaffirm the authority of the state. That's why the JCPS cluster, we are dealing with this matter to ensure that these public demonstrations, whenever there are violations of the rights of other citizens, we have to take a firm position to arrest them, to be charged. So part of the reasons the DG is not here is because those plans are being finalized by the JCPS Cluster Committee of DGs. On the third-party funds, I think the acting CFO would give more clarity, even on discussions we've had with the National Treasury. Same, that one, I think maybe the Deputy Minister will talk on this issue of the role of the SAPS within the context of sexual offences against women and children. Solicitor General, we provided the committee last year with a document of how to transform legal services within the state. And part of the transformation is to deal with the issues of state attorneys that are all over South Africa. There's no one woman or man to shoot if there are challenges. So that's basically to create a similar dispensation as the one of the National Director of Public Prosecutions, who's responsible on the criminal side and this one on the civil side. On the Bulukwane fire, the last brief was that there had not been any culprits who had been caught, but things might have changed, but the officials will indicate that. So maybe if the Deputy Minister can deal with the issue of the sexual offences and the acting CFO on the issues around the third-party funds. And then the COO can give more information on the issues around the TRC, where we are at the moment. And also the CFO, if there's more information on the special occupational dispensation at the National Prosecuting Authority.
Good, Chairperson, Minister, thank you very much. And good morning to all members of the committee. Firstly, with regard to judicial education, I think the first point that needs to be made is that it's a cause for celebration that the South African Judicial Education Institute, after many years of struggling to get off the ground, is very much operational since last year, when it started to run especially induction programs for newly appointed judges. I don't have the exact figures off the top of my head, but we can furnish them in the course of today, but I believe that more than 1,000 or 1,200 judges and magistrates have received training since last year. At the last meeting of the Institute, which took place this past Friday, we raised very sharply the issue of the need for the Institute to be active in the field of training with regard to sexual and gender-based violence. So I think we're also very happy to be able to share with you that Sajay will be hosting a judicial education conference on sexual and gender-based violence, I think around the 14th, 15th, or the 15th or 16th of March. A big part of that is the question of social context training, of changing the mindsets of judicial officers in matters generally, but specifically in social context training. With regard to the Honourable Smuts's question as to who exactly does that training, I think that's something that we would need to revert. But I can make the general point that as the Council of Sajay, we felt that now that training is up and running and is happening, we as a Council also need to exercise a much more active role in overseeing the nature and the content of the training. I think just in conclusion to say that we must bear in mind that in terms of the Sajay Act, I mean that all of that activity takes place under the direction of the council, which is chaired by the Chief Justice. So it's not a question of us whilst we as the executive certainly do have ideas and we do raise those in the council, it's not for us to dictate. It's a decision that's taken collectively by the council. Then secondly, with regard to sexual offences, yes, there are problems with regard to collection of evidence, but it is something that we are working very, very closely with the police on, both at a political level, but more especially at the level of the DEVCOM, which brings together all of the role players within the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster. The whole question of training of police, I think, has been increased from 6 months to 2 years. Greater emphasis on recruitment and training of detectives, qualified detectives. The very, very important issue of the forensic and the medical laboratories, which we all recognize as a challenge, and we're working closely with the police and with health to sort those matters out. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Thanks, Minister and members of the committee. Just starting with the TRC, I think members of the committee would recall that a year ago when we met, we indicated that with regard to agent reparations, there were about 875 outstanding people. I'm happy to report that as of today, from that 875, we are down to 62. People, and the 62 are mainly in KwaZulu-Natal. There are 49 people we are looking for in KwaZulu-Natal, and there are 12 people in the Western Cape. So all other seven provinces, we managed to find people. So I think we are doing well then. I think the Minister is correct on the issue of regulations. I think the Department of Justice has done all it could on regulations relating to basic education, higher education, as well as health. Insofar as those are concerned, I think all that we are waiting for, our minister has written to the Minister of Basic and Higher Education just to get their consent so that we could then take it to Cabinet to ratify. The only concern with medical assistance is from the Minister of Finance. We wanted to be assured that we are not starting a new medical scheme for these victims. So I think we are just working on that through the minister. Lastly, just on TRC, members would also recall that we made a presentation on the 18 communities that we are targeting for community rehabilitation, which methodology our minister has approved. I'm also just pleased to say that we have started with two, Alexandra in particular and Mamelodi. The only challenge there is that consultations don't go quickly because there's a variety of stakeholders you have to go through. So, but we hope that in the next few weeks we'll just increase it, the number of those communities. With OSD, if I may just answer the question of OSD, the department is encountering problems with the occupational specific dispensation. And the challenges that we are facing, one is that there are certain categories of legally qualified officials who were excluded from the dispensation. And as a result, there were a number of challenges, legal challenges by officials in this regard. But two, it creates certain inequities in the department in a sense that the people who tend to benefit from OSD are mainly of officials who have a much longer service in the public service than others. And it has created concerns. But I'm happy to report that there's an impending meeting between our Director General and the Director General of Public Service and Administration to raise these concerns as well as to look for solutions with regard to this matter. On the issue of the performance assessments of senior managers, we do not have a crisis on the performance assessments. There have been some delays, but I'm also happy to report that tomorrow there's a moderating committee to just process the outstanding assessments of the remaining senior managers. And we have allocated money to pay those outstanding assessments. So I think we are on top of that. We think we are sorted. I think by end of tomorrow we should be sorted. Yeah, I think that's all I would.
Thank you, Minister Chairperson and members of the committee. In addition to what Dr. De Vries indicated in relation to personnel budgeting and personnel strain, yes, we can confirm that a large number of officials, and we can report the numbers and the levels, did receive in the month of November, December, the outstanding notches, the notch increments and performance bonuses to those who would deal. In the NPA specifically, apart from the OSD, there is this problem of the implementation of job evaluation results, and yet there was a particular core decision around that, and it was implemented. Now, yes, we sit with the implementation of a job evaluation results. We just had a problem with a DPC director, a further director of upgrading of lower-level staff. Now, those are the things that put substantial strain on our departmental budget, and we must be really cautious not to get to an overspending or unauthorized expenditure situation. We are assisting the NPA, and we will look at savings, and again, within the rules of PFMA, to see if there's savings within the justice budget, to environment it, the program for within the same justice vote. It is feasible, it can be done, it's not against the PFMA. So our personnel budget is under strain, but if we have a vacancy rate of 9%, it should translate in certain savings. Now that vacancy rate, those savings we can utilize to clear these things that is problematic for us, outstanding OSDs, outstanding management job evaluation minimum results. It is currently on for the past 11 months, justice had a vacancy rate of 9%. Now that vacancy rate should translate in certain savings. Now we would want to use it to assist the NPA to clear the backlog. Justice related, yes. Thank you. Then further on in relation to budget cuts, we are not in a position to suspend services. But we were really forced by this national treasury cut of 610 million rand to really look at our infrastructure program. Now, on average, annually we've got more than a billion rand available for infrastructure. Now, the treasury budget cut, it was more than 1 billion rand. The treasury budget cut was over the next 3 years, is 100 million rand, 90 million rand, and 119 million. It's 380 million rand over a three-year period. Our challenge is now with those budget cuts to possibly look how do we plan certain maintenance, certain upgrades, and with reprioritization, possibly look at prioritizing these courts that is burned down. In relation to the SIU, you in the committee might be aware that 2 or 3 years ago there was a problem in the SIU where they couldn't recoup money from departments. Treasury then did, what Treasury did was they made once-off cash injections into the SIU ending this year. The basic thought was that the SIU would sort out the regulatory issues that affects their capability to recoup money so that in the new financial year they then possibly can recoup the money in addition to the government appropriation. And it is, when we do the formal budget presentation to yourself, you will see the spike or increases and trends in government appropriations for the SIU. In relation to the... Yes?
Statutory problem which we corrected. They should be then able to recoup now. I presume that amendment is in effect.
In relation to the one outstanding area of our financial management, the third-party funds, we can confirm, as the minister indicated, in the past 12 months, we went back and concluded 3 sets of financial statements. The Auditor General will report to the minister, they've reported to the DG, they will report to yourself later in this month what was our progress, and we're quite optimistic that we will be able to clear the audit, and our commitment is for this financial year to get a clean audit, especially in relation to revenue as it relates to third-party funds. So after the work that we've concluded on that area, the big part is going forward to fix the governance. Now, the governance is to appropriate legislation. legislation. We've got the legislation ready. We've got the cabinet memorandum ready. In this process, when we table the new bill, after internal consultation, we've worked it out. We're clear what we want to present to you, to Parliament, to yourself, and to the Ministry of Finance. It means the new fund will be equivalent to the guidance fund. We've dealt with the issue of the trading entity. The trading entity was something that relates to the public-private partnership years ago. So the Ministry of Finance will get an opportunity to respond to our recommendation. So for us to clear the third-party funds issues, the only part now is to sort the appropriate governance framework, because that will then confirm appropriate accounting. But what we want to say at this is we're substantially optimistic that we're busy clearing the qualifications on third-party funds. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. Just on Sajjay, to say that the figures are that for 2012-13, 8 training sessions were held for judges involving 248 delegates, and 38 training sessions were held for magistrates involving 1,163. Secondly, with regard to the issue of sexual offences and the collection of evidence, I think we can also share that the legislation, the DNA legislation, which will assist tremendously with regard to all manner of crimes, but specifically with sexual and gender-based violence crimes, is at a very advanced stage. And I think the police will be bringing it into the cabinet cycle within a very, very short space of time.
The thing is, why justice allowed this to be excised from the...
No. I think we share those sentiments. My very first meeting, I've recognized you, JJ. My very first meeting as chair, this wasn't in a portfolio committee, it was in a study group. The minister caught me completely off guard when he asked, "Where's that bill?" And there I was sitting and I was saying, "Oh my God." And since then, well, I don't really know its history. I know that the Portfolio Committee on Police had gone to Canada on a study tour, ostensibly. But, well...
to Canada or study?
And they've come back. We don't know what they've done. Now it's gone back to the police ministry, and, well, I don't know. Somebody should be able to tell us. But I know the minister feels very strongly it should come to this committee, and we all agree with that, so we'll have to look at when it comes back. Mr. Jeffrey Hoffendubber.
On this particular point, I mean, my understanding was that the bill, which is an amendment to the Criminal Procedure Act, which is assigned to the Minister of Justice, that the first bill went to an ad hoc committee because I think the Justice Committee was overburdened in the last Parliament. I think that ad hoc committee didn't complete it, and this Parliament referred it to the Police Committee. But the content of that first bill was dealing with fingerprints, which was more of a police issue. The concern over the DNA bill, which was, as far as I understand, will also be an amendment to the Criminal Procedure Act, resting, Minister, under yourself, is that it deals more with evidentiary matters in court. So I think it's even more crucial obviously it's a question of where it comes to in Parliament depends on which minister is responsible. So unfortunately, you've got to win the battle elsewhere. But I think in terms of it's which minister is introducing the bill. If the Minister of Justice introduces the bill, it will come here. If the Minister of Police introduces the bill, it will go to police. I would hope the former Deputy Chief Whip, who I think you may know, Minister, will will be able to confirm that. But I think it is quite crucial. I mean, for one, it's evidence issues. So I think it is quite crucial that it comes here. With regard to the police committee going on study trips on the matter, well, Minister, they went on a study trip to Australia on the trafficking bill, which was your bill, our bill, and we never had any input from them. That was last year, not this current police committee. So it seems they have a habit on checking on other people's things.
No, but Chairperson, I think those all of those matters are noted, and I think between ourselves and the committee and the Office of the Speaker and, of course, our colleagues in police, one would need to determine what would be the best point in Parliament at which to process the legislation. But I think those issues shouldn't detract from what is the central issue here, is that legislation is on its way to Parliament in the very near future that is going to add massively to our armoury to fight sexual and gender-based violence.
No. I think... Yes, quite right, Mr. Smuts.
I'm so glad to see that some have adopted CADA deployment as well.
No, I was... Mr. Jeffrey, I was going to say that, and I'm appealing to on this point, I acknowledge that quite often the Justice Portfolio Committee becomes snowed under with work. But when legislation is shifted away from us, well, it'll be good if there's proper consultation. Yeah, and I have specific views about ad hoc committees. They just don't work. Yes. They just don't work. All right. Honourable members, second up? Yes. Prof. Ndabandaba and then Mrs. Schaefer.
Thank you very much. First of all, I want to thank the Minister for this good and explorative account. I agree, I want to make a comment here for no question. I agree that victims of rape and other violent crimes are not always eager to come forward and report these incidents for the law to take its course. Now, the reasons for this are clear. Criminologists have done research in this field, and they've established that victims of violent crimes are always scared of further victimization. If you report, the criminal will come back to you and do something worse than they did to you initially. So we need to work hard by educating the people that they need to report and reduce this fear of further victimization, which is withholding them not to report. We need to encourage the victims to come forward and report such victimization by educating the public to really come forward, because if we don't do that, this thing will continue and we shall not win in the war against violent crimes. Thank you, Chair.
Schaefer and then Mr. Jeffrey.
Thank you, Chair. Regarding the DNA bill, I was on that committee at the time. It was split off. And the reason why it was split off is because there were so many human rights-related issues regarding the DNA section of it that we thought it was going to take too long to pass the fingerprint section. So we decided rather to split off so at least the fingerprint section could be dealt with quickly, and it has been done already quite a while ago. So the fingerprints, at least the police can deal with the fingerprint aspect. I also need to just remind you that I did raise this about a year ago in this committee, that we should be involved with that bill, so it's not new. I think my colleague, in fact, protested that we had too much work, but, I mean, I have raised it before. My concern with the Deputy Minister's statement is that it's all very well passing legislation, it's implementation that is the problem always, and we can have as much DNA legislation as you like, but with the police walk around a crime scene without anything covering on their feet and without getting rape kits and so on, it's not going to help. That's my concern. My concern is at the basic level where they actually go to the crime scene and very often don't know how to secure the crimes. I mean, the other problems with forensics come on later on. And just to the Minister, I'm not going to let him off that easily. Minister, what do you mean by imminent? And what is the delay? Why has it taken so long? Please.
Slightly different issue. Just sexual offences courts. I think it would be useful if when the department does its report that there's maybe detail given of existing sexual offences courts, because I thought there were still some that were left. I note that your input says that you will announce details soon, but it would be useful for us. We would be very interested in that. And as far as I understand, and it comes from the judges' conference that the former Chief Justice Norbo convened, that the problem seemed to be the magistrates not wanting to sit on the courts on the basis that they got too traumatized. I'm not too sure what happens to the members of the child protection or the sexual offences units in the police and the prosecutors and things like that. But the victims, it only, you know, hopefully happens once in a once. But it seemed to be the magistrates particularly that got traumatized. But anyway, it would be useful on that. Then maybe just one point on the TRC. Minister, we weren't, you didn't ask our input on the communities. You don't have to, and I have no problem with Alex and Alexandra and Mama Lordi. But my concern was just there seemed to be a symmetrical approach provincially in terms of, I think it was each province, two communities. And as far as, obviously apartheid applied everywhere, but particular communities got more traumatized during the struggle than others. So you might have an incident in a particular community that a community becomes known for, but you would then have other communities where there was literally war, the youth of that community got completely brutalized, a war going over a longer period. And I don't know if how far whether other communities have been looked at, but that was my concern with the Tupa province approach. You would know, Minister, obviously, with KZN, that it was whole communities brutalized, arbitrary people, victims, the youth of a community brutalized because they had to go on to go and camp in protection of that community and the generation destroyed. So I would hope, and you know, the KZN would be the same, let's say, as I don't want to name another province, but it's the same as a province which had less of an impact. So just to raise to raise that as a point as well.
Anybody else? No.
Yeah, I accept the point by Ndabandaba on the issue, the sociological aspect of the victims of sexual offences. That's the point also that we highlight in our approach of educating our people as a whole, because just putting this issue purely at the hands of law enforcement agency or just the cluster will not be able to solve the problem. We also need to look at societal reasons why people do not come forward. So it requires all of us, in particular communities, to be completely conscious of this point and support victims and educate them and challenge everybody to report, especially from families, because as we know, research indicates that it's members of families who do these dastardly deeds. I heard about the issue of the genesis of this DNA legislation. We just hope that if it comes, we should be able to deal with it as soon as possible. I can add no more to what I've said about the appointments. The presidential spokesperson, Nek Maharaj, also highlighted this over the weekend, so I do know that it is imminent.
I accept as well Jeffrey's points on both the sexual offences. I've already spoken with the Chief Justice in terms of consultation on this matter, and I do know that they are also very keen to ensure that these dedicated courts are up and running as soon as possible. On the issue of TRC, I also accept the communities there. There is a program already in the department in terms of reparations, quote-unquote, in ensuring that over and above what DV has highlighted, that there must be community projects that must deal precisely with those communities that were traumatized by the system of apartheid in terms of creating community assets that can be able to ensure that we do not forget what happened during the system of apartheid, but also as a form of healing for those particular communities. So I think that's where I end.
Do you, Minister? Don't want to add, okay.
On it, may, it may have been misconstrued what I was saying about victims and victims of sexual offences and trauma. What I was trying to say is that, I mean, somebody, I was comparing the magistrates with the other people in the
in the
criminal justice system. And that they are dealing with sexual offences, different sexual offences cases. That's their job. And just making, I suppose, a bit of an adverse comment about the fact that magistrates seem to be particularly get traumatized, whereas the other participants, the police, the prosecutors, the social workers even don't. And then obviously as far as a victim is concerned, that obviously a victim would be incredibly traumatized by a victim of a sexual offense would be particularly traumatized. That was the sort of point I was trying to make. But the point was basically referring more to the participants in the sexual offences criminal justice system.
Advocate Luzelle Adams.
Minister, the allocation and spending of taxpayers' money in this department is obviously good and well, and I do think that we should continue with it. But obviously the Minister and the President of this country must obviously speak with the same tongue. Now, it's good if you state on page slide that crime and corruption pose the greatest threat against the realization of all the five priorities of government, and it is for this reason that the JCPS cluster must put measures in place to guarantee the safety of citizens for the full realization of the rights enshrined in the Constitution. That is very good. But is it worth putting measures in place to safeguard citizens if the President stated that prisons are for people that cannot resolve problems? The second issue is there's always been issues or articles in the newspaper about the corruption charges that were dropped, the 2006 corruption charges that were dropped by the NPA. Are you not concerned that these charges or the fact that it's still in the media creates an impression that all is not equal before the law? My third question is, the current police brutality, you all know about it, I don't have to go into details of that. Can you tell us whether the Minister of Police is really assisting you as the Minister of Justice in prevention of crime then? My last question is about the money that was allocated for the revamp of the criminal justice system. Again, that is all good and well. But you would also recall that some time ago, the President of this country stated that, I always criticize legal people. They always deal with cold facts, but they forget that those cold facts are associated with warm bodies. Let us solve African problems the African way and not the white man's way. So my question to you is, given the fact that there's now going to be money allocated for the revamp of the criminal justice system, is what the President's saying, is that not a slap in the face of really the revamp of the criminal justice system? And is it then all worth listening to you and the Department of Justice by everything that you have said if the President of this country is just doing the opposite? Thank you.
one of the questions from Honorable Adams relates to statements made by the President. I can't speak on his behalf, so I don't think it is fair that I should respond to the issues that you have raised. On the issue of police brutality, I think what we've seen, especially with this Mozambican who was killed at police hands, is something that all of us condemn. The President has done so, the Department of Police, the National Police Commissioner has taken steps in order to bring to book those who are involved, are being charged, as I understand it, and those police have also been temporarily been removed from their position. So there is firm action that has been taken about that. On the revamp of the criminal justice system, in good time, if the committee wants to know more about this, we can come and make a full presentation about what is being done in this criminal justice system, especially the modernization program that we are involved with. One of the positive aspects of this budget, there has been a lot of money, I can't remember the figure, that the Minister of Finance has put to the Department of Justice in order to continue with this work of revamping the criminal justice system.
Chairperson, if I can just make a follow-up question. I just want to know, yes or no, is the President, through his actions, supporting this department? That's all I want to know.
Yes. Is the head of the National Executive, and he actually chairs the Cabinet Committee on Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster. He gives us his full support in the work that we do.
Minister, I'm being given signals by the members of the committee that that briefing and presentation on the revamp would be most welcome. So as soon as whoever you want to do it is ready, we would welcome it. Sorry?
Could it be inclusive of the plan about how to roll out the sexual offences courts also?
Yes, JJ.
Was this the issue of the new department of the Office of the Chief Justice? And, I mean, it's new. There's a head, as you've indicated. Presumably we would be engaging with her on the budgetary and the review matters. But we may, it's not necessarily I mean, I don't know if you've got any thoughts on the head of that office, political head, I suppose you could say, is the Chief Justice. I don't know how one relates to the Chief Justice on the implementation of programs of that office, but I don't know if you've got any thoughts on that. It's new territory for us.
I can, before you answer, Minister, I can inform you that at some point, now that the Secretary General has been appointed, we are looking at inviting her to come and speak to us. Yes, obviously, but you understand the view.
That will be the best. She can come and explain for herself what's going on there. But from our perspective, we give them all the support. It's just the mechanism, because on the present legal framework, that's how it had to be done. But I'm speaking with the Chief Justice and the heads of court about the model of the court's administration, that process is ongoing, which will eventually lead into legislation, hopefully in the coming financial year.
I'd like to ask the Minister this. The background to asking this is that something seems to be very wrong in KZN with the NPA. And but, I mean, I base the remark on what I see in the papers, so it's not conclusive. But in the wake of the dropping of charges against the KZN speaker and MEC in the Amigos case, there's now there are reports of the prosecution's boss, Noko, provisionally withdrawing bribery charges against a business person, Mr. Pandey, and Colonel Madu of the SAPS, in spite of conceding there's a prima facie case. And in fact, there was a photographed police sting, and there is a a relative of the of our president is said to be involved with the business. I just want to ask the minister this. He has even fewer powers than we do in respect of the NPA, because Section 33 of the NPA Act tries to give effect to your final constitutional responsibility by saying you can ask for reports and so forth. Section 35, which I use, although, you know, if I'd written that act, I wouldn't have put it in there, but I am the person who's using it. It says the NPA must account to us, and a good thing too. And so we do ask them about prosecutorial decisions. We, under that statute, we can. And we do that every time they come and visit us. And it is difficult, because it's difficult for her to answer without putting a foot wrong, but she does. Now, I'd like to ask you this, because we will be using our Section 35 powers again when the NPA visits. How often, sir, do you use your Section 33 powers to ask for reports on prosecutorial decisions or decisions in the respect of withdrawals or dropping? How frequently do you, in fact, use that?
I'm hands-on, not hands-in. But from time to time I do ask and they give me a report. Even on this one, I've had a scheduled meeting with the acting NPPP too, amongst others. Yeah.
No more. Okay. Minister, Deputy Minister, and Dr. De Veer and the rest of your very impressive staff. I see. Oh, Twinsies, yeah, too. How did he slip in without us seeing him? Welcome, just as we're going to say goodbye to you now. Minister, thank you very much. We appreciate your presence, Deputy Minister, and the rest of the senior officials present. We miss the DG. We know that she's involved in some important work, but we do miss her. Okay.
But this time there'll be a handful.
All right. We're grateful to you for sharing your thoughts with us and your views. And we're looking forward to the budget debate. Yes. Well, that's it. But one or two outstanding issues, honourable members, whilst the ministers and the officials leave. Just bear with me, please. Won't be more than 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you very much. JJ. Cop out? Imminent. Okay. Members, I've got this letter. Let me read it to you. It's from the minister. I submit this urgent meeting request on behalf of the acting NDPP in order for them to officially provide the honourable members with a status update on the NPA's budget position. I am of the view that it is prudent for the NPA leadership to engage the portfolio committee on the impact that this current financial situation has on the organisation's operational and service delivery environment. In this engagement, the NPA will also present their plan for alternative measures for the rest of the current financial year into 2013/14 and the ensuing years to effectively deal with the pressures occasioned by the current financial position. I look forward to a positive response from your office. This was written to me by the minister. Yes.
This is presumably a request for a meeting over and above the normal strat plan and budget.
It sounds like it, yes.
I think they're going to afford to come.
I also found it odd,
yeah.
But then I realized that it's
yeah,
due,
but there's some crisis. And I just wonder, I mean, the closer it's held to their strat plan hearing, the better, because what is it I think we're going to do in the short term? Or
I don't know. I think there's budget cuts, and they want to come and explain to us the implications thereof.
I think there's some big financial.
Or maybe
problem.
There's more.
Similar difficulty. They're coming. I mean, we've had the process of the budget process is the political head, the minister, then it's the DG, and then after the DG,
the head of the NPA.
The different votes, yeah. And one of them is the head of the NPA. So I'd suggest you maybe discuss with the acting head as to does she need to come specially, because part of the explanation that they would give us in the normal course would be how they're going to spend the money and how they're going to have to do with less.
Okay.
So if she wants another one, that's fine, and it's urgent. If she can wait, then, and I'm not sure when we're having the department presenting and when we're doing all these inputs, whether it's later this month or only April.
In some cases, April. But I'll engage with the NDPP.
Yeah, and I mean, the other option is that, because, I mean, just not to have, it's quite a big team that always come.
Yeah.
And not to have them flying up and down the whole time. It's not really, it's not good to have her before the DG.
Mm.
But if that's what it means, then I think we could be sympathetic to that.
Oh. Yeah. Mr. Schaefer.
I can also say perhaps they should take a leaf out of the Human Rights Commission's book and make sure they don't come with a whole big delegation if they haven't got money.
Mr. Swart?
Being created that we are going to act urgently and can we do so?
Wrong.
That is a concern,
yeah.
You see.
Don't
they might think.
Wrong.
And there's a process. That's the
sure,
that's
but then again, it's good if they inform us, you see, so that we know.
But if they're scheduled to come 2 weeks later, for example, and I think 2 weeks earlier would make a big difference. I don't know. I don't think so.
That's the intention.
No.
Let me speak to her,
yeah.
And see what she says. All right. The better. I agree. All right. Anything else? No? Thank you very much. We're done.